right, welcome back. 239-1310, 239-1310. It's Afternoons with Amos. Now, everybody knows the Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce has been around ever since there's been Indianapolis, and that is the organization that speaks for the business community, not just the big businesses in town, but also all of the businesses from the smallest to the largest, majority-owned, minority-owned, women-owned, everybody that wants to be a member of the chamber. All you do, you pay your dues, you're a member of the chamber. There's also job development organizations. One is Develop Indy that has dealt with trying to bring jobs within the city of Indianapolis. And then there's another group that kept changing names every 5 or 6 years that was responsible for the region. Now these all seem to be merging. And the question is, okay, is this going to benefit the suburbs? Is it going to benefit the city? How does that fit with the Chamber of Commerce? Because that's usually a little unusual for Chamber of Commerce is doing that. Brother Scott Jones is in now. Take it right.
Scott Miller.
Scott Miller. See all these Scotts.
There's another Scott Jones, and he's got a little more money.
Scott Miller, head of the new head of the chamber, and is here. Long Tammy's here to try to keep me out of trouble, and all of that. Guys, welcome.
Thank you. Thanks so much for having us.
Why the merger?
Yep.
Is it just to save money?
No. You know, in 2008, when the fiscal crisis hit, I think a lot of our, especially our larger businesses in town, but even the smaller ones, started looking at the variety of organizations that we have representing the business community. And they started looking at ways that we could become more efficient and maybe more effective even. And so over the last 2 to 3 years, we've taken a look at our organizational structures and tried to see what the best way to provide services for our business community and for prospective businesses to come to town is. And so we began to look at multiple organizations in town and kind of settled on four that seemed to have similar focuses and emphasis. And so we believe that by bringing together these organizations that we can now put more dollars to the actual work being done instead of having overhead where you have an IT department, an accounting department for every one of those organizations, and bring a common focus to what we're trying to do.
What about the concern that, wait a minute, now you got the regional folks under the umbrella, you got the folks in the city under the umbrella. Well, they're all going to make sure the jobs go to Plainfield and the jobs go to Lebanon and the jobs go to Franklin and nothing will go to Martindale Brightwood or nothing will go to Garfield Park or nothing will go out to West Indianapolis, particularly the older neighborhoods of our city or even areas like Lafayette Square, Park 100 that's kind of hurting, trying to, you know, infill a lot of these vacant spaces where we've got a lot of great inventory to place businesses.
You're exactly right, Amos. One of the things that we're going to have as one of our priorities is neighborhood revitalization. Mm-hmm. And so as we look at that and bringing resources to bear, we think that those neighborhoods that you just mentioned are critical to Marion County, but also to our region. And without a strong core, the region will suffer. The same thing can be said. Sometimes you might look at a Plainfield or a Carmel. They have areas within their own or within their own cities that have neighborhood revitalization that needs to take place as well. Mm-hmm. On the question of whether it will impact Marion County negatively or the suburbs negatively, what we're going to do is set up separate business units. So one business unit will focus on Marion County. Mm-hmm. We'll have a separate business unit that's more regional in scope and will focus specifically on the region and have more of a regional feel to it. We are also part of the region being right. Marion County. And so we're looking at this as a positive for each of the groups, and we believe it'll bring success to our entire region.
I was in Chicago last week, and one of the things I noticed in reading the Chicago media is that Mayor Rahm Emanuel seems to be creating mechanisms to specifically bring business opportunities to abandon businesses. In other words, areas where a business may have left a blight, and Rahm Emanuel using TIFs, using some other creative financing to encourage businesses and being very aggressive about bringing businesses into those neighborhoods. Is that something as part of this reorganization that you're seeing that could happen here?
I think everything is on the table at this point in time, and we've actually studied World Business Chicago, which is the equivalent group to what Develop Indy and right. even the Indy Partnership has been. And so we try to take and find best practices from each city. I would say, you know, we've got several projects right now that are taking place in our city. There's the Avondale Meadows project on the near northeast side. And then the project at 16 Tech, which is the rebuilding of Busch Stadium. Mm-hmm. And both of those have some TIF components to them that you just mentioned. And so we have tried to utilize some of those best practices to try and bring jobs into those areas of town, as well as to make them more livable.
With Scott Miller and Tammy Barney of the Greater Indianapolis Chamber of Commerce, one of the other issues that was coming up in Chicago is, and I didn't realize that we have a great rail system in America where trains can go from coast to coast at 50, 60, 70 miles an hour. These are the freight trains, and without the freight trains, this country would literally collapse and die. It's no joke. Mm-hmm. But that trains all have to go through Chicago, and they travel at 1 mile an hour through Chicago, and which is much slower than the trains that go through downtown Indianapolis. And I guess one of the things they're trying to do is change the infrastructure and invest some dollars so trains won't have to cross tracks, they can fly over. And one of the several neighborhoods are having opposition to those plans, not because they disagree with improving rail service through Chicago and the jobs it brings, but it's like, you're building something in our neighborhood. Where are the jobs for our community? You mentioned Avondale Meadows. You mentioned Tech 16. You know, somebody's getting ready to build a Supermarsh downtown. And one of the concerns, Scott Miller, that has come up in our community is, okay, we see these developments in the city. We get it. We understand it. But we don't see any of us working on those developments. We don't see where is the benefit that we help to build the Marsh, that we're helping to build Busch Stadium, rebuild Busch Stadium, that we're helping to do this. What is the chamber going to do? What is this all going to do? Is what good is bringing businesses in to start something new when in the building process we're not a part of it, particularly if you're building in our neighborhoods?
Yeah. So one of the entities that is coming under this umbrella is a fourth entity, which we haven't mentioned, mm-hmm. and that's called Business Ownership Initiative, which is led by Julie Grice, and that will also be a separate business unit under this umbrella to focus really on those businesses that are fewer than 25 employees. Business Ownership Initiative was originally started about 10 to 15 years ago to focus on especially female-owned businesses. Mm-hmm. But it's expanded to also focus on minority-owned businesses as well as just small business in general. That service will be providing microloans for people who are willing to invest and take a risk that they couldn't normally get from a normal bank.
Right.
And so we see BOI playing an incredibly important role, because a lot of times as we look at the different neighborhoods that we've mentioned already, you know, you do have the GM stamping plant, which is a large facility that could bring hundreds of jobs. But most of those other neighborhoods, you're going to have smaller pockets of ability to put in industry or IT companies, right, or you know, whatever the type of business might be. And so we feel BOI will be an important part of helping businesses grow in those neighborhoods. And all of our citizens will be impacted by that in a hopefully a positive way.
239-1310, 239-1310's Afternoon's Names with Scott Miller, Tammy Barney with the Chamber of Commerce. Send me a call or send me a text message at 85620, keyword Amos, or an email at praiseindy.com. When the folks from Avondale Meadows were here, they said one of their biggest frustrations is they're building a great development. They've got the dollars. It seems to be progressing well. They can't get retail to move off the dime. Retail is reluctant to go in there. Now, that obviously tells me that's the bigotry of retail. At what point, but I also detect that our business development units don't seem to be aggressive about bringing retail. We've got micro Walmarts now that are starting up across the country where they really want to go into urban areas. Walmart is successful in their stores around the Beltway. They could be successful here. There's other retail entrepreneurs. I sometimes get the sense that the business developers around here turn their nose up at retail when people out in the real world, out in communities, would take a retail job because that is a potential entry level to management jobs to branch out into, you know, expanding employment.
Yeah.
You know, how do you all, from a chamber point of view in this whole entity, where does retail fit in? Because I really think, and this goes back over several mayoral administrations, that we really as a city have not been aggressive at bringing retail into Marion County, even into downtown. We played around with it, and we've not really gotten serious about it.
Well, I think you are right. And, you know, I've been doing this for about 3 or 4 years, so I haven't been around for the multiple administrations, right, as you talked about. But that being said, one of the concepts or beliefs has always been that if you are able to bring in manufacturing or information technology, life sciences, that they will spawn off the retail markets. Right. One of the things that I think we're finding at Avondale Meadows, we were just talking about this morning. Some people refer to it as a food desert or a grocery right. store desert, right. you know. And so that is one of the important parts of the TIF that is being asked to help that area, because without that TIF, having that grocery store come in will probably be very difficult. So that is part of a little bit more of an aggressive strategy to help. And if you're able to establish a neighborhood grocery store, we think that along beside that will then come some retail. And so it is going to be a focus of ours as to how to make those communities livable within their city.
Is it also a different kind of grocery store? When we did the show out at the Legacy Center out at Tech, they talked about there's that grocery store on the Near East Side. It's not a chain store. What do they call it? It's like a cooperative, which is a little different model. The economics seem to be a little better. Is that something we need to look at in other urban areas? Instead of saying, well, we got to have a Walmart, we got to have a Kroger, we got to have a Marsh, maybe it's a co-op similar to what's going on the East Side.
You know, I think that's a great idea to look at all options. And so if there are businesses that are willing to do that or invest, or as you said, if there's a cooperative that's willing to step up and take that on, I think that's a great idea, Amos.
239-1310, 239-1310. Let me talk education. I was out last week when the iRead scores came out, did not see a statement from the Indy Chamber about iRead, IPS scored 67% of their kids passed, but only 66% of charters passed, which was not, I think, what a lot of people expected. Overall in Marion County, the figure was about 75-76% of all Marion County public school students passed iRead. How did the chamber view those results? First of all, do we need to be concerned?
Well, one of the things that I have spent probably the last 6 to 8 months doing is going around and meeting with as many business people as I can. And one of the questions that I first ask is, what do you think the most important issue is in our entire region? Mm-hmm. And the number one, I mean, probably 90 to 95% of the people will say education is our biggest issue. And that can be anywhere from pre-K all the way to getting doctoral degrees. So there are people on all spectrums of that saying, you know, if you have a lot of doctoral degrees or advanced degrees, you can raise you know, if you right. increase those by 1%, the gross domestic product here locally just increases dramatically by $1.3 billion. So education is incredibly important to our city. It's important to our business community. But I think it's important to us as citizens is for our next generation to have that education, because a lot of the jobs today, I was talking to one of the surrounding counties, right. and they said that they have 500 jobs in their county that are open today that they can't find workers to take those 500 jobs. I just find that almost breathtaking, that here's 500 jobs that are available, but we don't have the qualified workforce.
Is it the qualified workforce or the workforce, because you talk about the suburbs, can't yep. get there because we don't have the bus?
Well, and that's a great point, too, and transit. And so it's amazing how all of these initiatives fit together, Amos. So I think you are spot on. Education, economic development, transit, all three of those play to the same theme, and that's about making our community a more livable place, but also a great place to do business and get a job.
Let me go back to education. We've said this in the recorder. We said this. We were asked by the Indianapolis Business Journal to share some thoughts on education. This has come up on this program tangentially from time to time. The business community says education is the most important issue. But when a parent has to make a decision if their kid has a problem in school and you've got to make a choice between losing 2 hours worth of your wage to see about your kid in school because the boss won't let you off or the boss thinks you're running a scam on him, How can the business community want parents to get engaged, want education to be serious if that boss is not going to let that employee take care of business? And then in return, the school sends a note, says, yes, your employee really was here. We signed on it here. It's the dotted line. It's not a scam. This is for real.
Yeah. Well, I don't think we can make decisions for every business person. Right. And so, but one of the things that we can do is continue to help influence and communicate about things just like you're talking about. I think the more successful businesses in the future are going to be businesses that do allow flexibility to their employees and to their workforce and allow those people that their typical job may not be from 8 to 5 anymore. There may be starting to do some work at 6 in the morning at home, work till 9, have to go, as you said, to take care of a child or an elderly parent, and then come back to work or to be able to work mobily. And so with technology that we're having today, you know, more and more opportunities are available for people to do that. But I think it's important for us as a business community to continue to talk about those issues and how important it is for our parents to be able to spend time at schools away from the workplace. And so that's something that I think we'll have to continue to communicate about and talk to our businesses about.
Going back to iRead, the fact that of the 5 to 8 to 10 schools that had the worst iRead scores in the area, the bottom 5 were charters, which I don't think anyone expected. I know the Mind Trust has raised the issue that it really is time if charters are not doing their job. I think they singled out the two Imagine schools, which are a poster child for charters that need to have their charters pulled. I think there's some concern about the Project School. Flanner House was a disappointment because that was not typical of their performance. Are we at a point, is the business community at a point that says, okay, you know, IPS had some schools that weren't doing what they're supposed to do, and we're going to deal with that issue over the next few months in the turnaround. Are we really at a point where we really have to take a hard look at charters, particularly with the state coming in and chartering schools, and it's really unclear what kind of, you know, they don't really have a tie to the local community. It just seems like, you know, somebody come to them, give them a charter, and they say, go forth.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I think that choices or options are a great thing for people to be able to choose, you know, whether it's a charter school, a private school, parochial school, or a public school. And so the more options people have and that are viable options for them, I think that's incredibly important. I think that each of the schools probably needs to be taken a look at, you know. So as you mentioned, there may have been 5 or so charter schools that didn't meet up to the standards. And so I think that if we're going to hold certain groups accountable, we have to hold everybody accountable in those situations.
As you talk, you say you've talked to businesses around here. The unemployment rate for Marion County was released last year, the lowest unemployment rate since President Obama took the oath back in January of 2009. And we got to wait at least another month to see whether the April was a fluke or this is a real trend. What are businesses telling you? Are they saying they're starting to hire more? Are they saying the corner is being turned?
You know, I think it's a mixed bag. So as you do go and talk, certain industries are doing really well right now. Mm-hmm. And then there are other industries that they still are a little bit tentative about hiring. As they look to the future, they may have gotten, I'll call it, fat and happy in September of 2008 or even throughout 2008 when this was beginning to take place across America. And so I think it's still a mixed bag, and businesses, some of them are beginning to have cash available to be able to go and do some things, whether it's invest in capital or invest in people. But I think they want to see a prolonged run here before in the market just over the past week has dropped over 1,000 points for the Dow. And so we want to be sure as business people to make sure that the future looks good before you start really ramping up employment. The other thing I think is that there are a lot of people who may have just stopped looking for jobs, and that may be a part of the unemployment rate dropping. Right. Still, I think it's encouraging. Anytime that unemployment rate goes down, that's a great thing for our country and for our city here in Indianapolis.
The Chamber of Commerce had been a strong proponent of trying to figure out ways to encourage businesses to responsibly hire ex-offenders. Where is that effort going? How's that effort going?
Yep. You know, just recently, Councilor Ossoli and I had a chance to spend some time together, and Angela on our team, who handles our business advocacy, we think that's a really important concept that's taking place throughout America, not just here in Indianapolis, but right. But how do we effectively communicate that to the business community and find ways to employ ex-offenders? Incredibly important, because as you look at our unemployment rate, a high number of those people who are employed today or unemployed are ex-offenders. Mm-hmm. And if we're able to find them roles in our community, I think that will be a huge turning point for our community.
Is it also important for the business community to tell the general community what some of the reluctances are? Because some of the reluctances have valid business reasons. I mean, if you run a bank, you really don't want anybody that's had a problem handling money working for the bank. And I think people kind of get that.
Yep.
Does the business community have some obligation to explain to the larger community, maybe not hard specifics, but to kind of characterize, here's some of our concerns and the problem and the worry of litigation?
Yeah, well, and there's a saying, past performance is a pretty good indicator of future, productivity and future performance. I used to run a commercial landscape firm here in Indianapolis, right. And we had a faith perspective, and so we kind of said, hey, there's a bigger mission here than just making money at the end right. of the day. And one of the things that we did do was we looked at hiring ex-offenders and brought some of those people in. Our experience wasn't a positive one. Mm. And so when we did that, there ended up being theft out of our shop and those types of things. And so that is challenging. And so mm-hmm.
Once burned, next time shy.
Yeah. Yet we may not have looked at that person's specific past to say, is there a better role, or did we set them up for failure mm-hmm. by putting them in a role that wasn't conducive for them being successful in the future? So even though, like you said, it may have been burned once, I think there are opportunities out there. And thing that I look at is I've made a lot of mistakes in my life. Mm-hmm. And if there weren't people there to forgive me and give me a second chance, I think it would be really difficult to be where I'm at today.
Let me go to Tony right quick at 239-1310. Hi, Tony. Got about a minute.
Hey, this is going to take a quick second. Can he ask any of your questions? I'm about to fall asleep. Thank you.
All right. Well, I'm not falling asleep. Let me go to Vince right quick. Hi, Vince.
Yes, I had a question. Is there any way that the Chamber of Commerce could maybe partner with the government and hire ex-offenders for the military? I mean, give them a choice. I remember the movie The Dirty Dozen, and they did a great job.
You know, Vince, I asked about 3 years ago, we had the head general in charge of recruiting for the entire U.S. Army. Mm-hmm. And I brought that up because we'd had that example of callers saying, hey, why don't we just get somebody, instead of send them to jail for the crime, send them over to Iraq. And the general said, look, we want trained people who can operate under discipline, who know how to shoot straight, not shoot a gun at an angle. Okay. And that will not work. And I think the general was extraordinarily honest about people and what people said in real terms. Scott?
Yeah, I think that as we take a look at, one of the things that I just saw recently in the front page of the USA Today was ex-offenders who are getting out and helping with crime prevention. I think mm-hmm. it's called Save Our Streets.
Save Our Streets, right.
And maybe there are opportunities in those types of situations where people can actually re-enter and be a productive citizen after they've been to prison or been to jail and be able to step into a role.
And I think the military has now gotten so used to being a professional force of mm-hmm. people who really want to be there and want to do a good job. I think if the draft came back, they'd have a hard time adjusting to that. Anonymous will be our last caller with the folks from the Chamber of Commerce. Hi, Anonymous.
Hi. I'd like to just make a comment. Mm-hmm. I am an ex-offender working through a program, and what I would like to see happen is that we get more reputable companies that will employ ex-felons, because some of the companies that I've gone for, I went for an interview with a guy that ran a business with money. Mm-hmm. And I'm a forger, so I should have never been sent out on that interview, but I was, and it was humiliating. But now I work for an employer that it's not very reasonable. And that is, and I understand that we're going to run into those kind of situations, but it's like a setback for us.
So you were in the program, and the program didn't even have any respect for the employer that they sent you out to, or respect for you.
They sent me to a guy that runs a business with money, and he had the right to be concerned about his information and my background.
No,
forgery.
You made a very, very good point. I tell you what.
Basically, he got on the internet and looked me up, and, you know, I don't know what they disclosed to people or whatever, but it was humiliating for me to go out and interview for
and
that
this
type
was a,
of job.
And this was an agency in town that did that?
Yes.
Don't put the program name on the air, but I want you to hold on. I want you to give that name to Chris off the air.
No, I'm not going to do that again because I did that once before,
okay.
And I got phone calls from downtown, and I'm currently still in that program.
Oh, I see.
And I'm still working 4 months into this job, and this company is hunks too, but they give felonies. They give felons a chance, and that's what I wanted, the opportunity to be able to get up, go to work, and prove that I want a job. But I don't want to be mistreated because I'm a felon.
You know, that's a great
test. I don't want to be given the doo-doo job because I'm a felon.
You made a great testimony, and I'm sure it's going to have an impact on Scott Miller and Tammy Barney with the Chamber, guys. Thanks. First of all, thank you, Anonymous. Thank you very, very much. And they'll be trying to look out, you know, what kind of program is sending people out and not prepping them well. Scott Miller, Tammy Barney with the Chamber, thanks very much. Tammy was just so quiet. Just so laid back today.
Just came to visit.
Thanks very much for being with us.